And welcome to Swiss Info's programme for September the 26th. I'm Jo Fay.
There are about 100 wax mouldings. They look like body parts.
Medicine has come a long way in the last century. This week we look at medicine past, present and future, and how we still need to look back to look ahead. Set out in the basement of a beautiful villa in a corner of Geneva are what look like modern-day torture instruments. The Museum of the History of Science is home to an important collection of early medical tools. Its collection of telescopes and microscopes belong to scientist Ferdinand Saussure. The medical instruments are still of great interest for young medics and researchers today. Curator Stefan Fischer gave Swiss Info's Simon Bradley a special tour.
Bonjour, Monsieur Fischer.
Stefan Fischer, bonjour.
Enchanté, Simon Bradley.
Bienvenue.
So here we are in the stockroom down underground. This place is really like an Ali Baba's cave, packed full of old instruments.
Strange
What's
thing.
What's that? It's a beautiful, intricate sort of leather box.
Yeah.
Copper, what box?
Copper or brass. Sometimes they use brass also a lot. And here below you see there's a lot of little...
Frightening-looking blades.
Yeah, blades who come out.
These mini blades mini suddenly blades, sort of appear at the bottom of this this box. What was that used for?
You just put them on your skin under the crankle, and all these blades went into the skin.
So they leave a tiny little cut in your arm. Yeah.
A little cut. And then press the skin to take the blood out.
So here we have a metal drill, a hand drill, which has a blade almost at the end, or a bore, a boring piece.
To make a small hole in a skull.
In a skull, yeah.
Yeah, in a skull.
And then you have some other sort of devices which are almost like chisels. What are these things here?
Yeah, I mean, once you open the skull, you had to go inside to take out the pain or whatever. What are you looking for? Without damaging the brain, hopefully.
Down in the underground vault, there's another special medical collection which is kept locked away, but which remains popular with researchers. Gosh, these are incredible. There are about 100 wax mouldings. They look like body parts, but they're all like yellow mouldings, which were made in the 19th century of parts of the body, legs, faces, intimate parts, toes, all of people who have venereal disease. Quite a sort of graphic collection here, Stefan.
It's quite terrific, and maybe you understand now why we cannot expose and present this part of the collection, of the medical collection.
But this is still very much of interest to medics and other researchers.
The doctor, the dermatologist knows that this kind of disease is coming back again. And still some dermatologists come in the museum to see how this disease looks like. I mean, who they looked like maybe 100 years ago.
Are these just antiques, or do you think these are still relevant?
Today, if you see all the practice in a surgery room, they do the same, but they have like electric drilling machine. And basically, you need the same tool to open a skull. Huh? You could not do it differently. Huh?
What is the value of all these objects? Not financially, but historically.
The witness of our culture, also of a part of history, and it's good to know where we come and where we go.
Simon Bradley reporting. Just why do we get sick? Well, evolutionary medicine, a relatively new area of research, is trying to find out, combining such fields as evolutionary biology, archaeology and immunology. It looks to the past to gain some understanding of the present and to find solutions for the future. The University of Zurich is at the forefront of evolutionary medicine research, particularly when it comes to delving into the health secrets of the ancients. Isabel Leibold-Johnson did some digging.
In 2014, a strange skeleton dating from the 17th century was found lying face down at the former Fraumünster convent in Zurich. It tells us something about an illness that affects thousands of people today. How? Daria Moser, a University of Zurich student archaeologist, helped analyse the remains of the 30-year-old man. Researchers found that the man had afflicted joints and teeth.
All these pathologies that we could see on here led us to the conclusion that it most probably has been rheumatoid arthritis. That's an autoimmune disease. And there has been a long ongoing discussion where it originated, and the current hypothesis is that it originated in the Americas and came over after Columbus. And what we now basically found out is that this is the earliest case of rheumatoid arthritis in the old world.
Rheumatoid arthritis is a chronic disabling condition, often causing pain and deformity. By looking back at this early case of rheumatoid arthritis, scientists hope to find out more about its evolution. This could help with finding a cure in the future, and this is essentially what evolutionary medicine is all about. Here's Frank Rühle, head of the Institute of Evolutionary Medicine at the University of Zurich, one of only a few such institutes worldwide.
Evolutionary medicine is a rather new part of medicine. It's a field which is expanding, developing. It basically applies principles from evolutionary biology into the assessment of medical problems,
thus giving an additional view on changes in human health. Its importance is clear, Rühle says.
Like Randolph Nassy, one of the pioneers of the field, said, it's basically medicine without evolutionary medicine is like engineering without physics.
So, for example, it seeks to answer questions like, why do we have blood? Why do we bleed? And what are the factors that support or stop bleeding in the body? Evolutionary medicine also looks at variation in humans and adaptation of humans. Sometimes adaptations take place over a very short time. Here's Rühle again.
I'm always telling my students that they practice for the next 50 years or so, and mankind actually changes in these 50 years. It's not like a stable situation, because often, particularly maybe unexperienced students may think, you know, it's everything like in the textbook, and that's like written in stone, and that's it. But it's not the case. We have adaptation of humans, we have changes in gene pools, we have population growth, we have migration. These are all factors which eventually actually influence the gene pool, the morphology, you know, how people look, how people act.
One area in which the Institute of Evolutionary Medicine in Zurich specializes is looking at disease in ancient mummies. They can tell us even more than skeletons, because the soft tissue is preserved through the embalming process. A surprising finding is that many of the ancient Egyptian mummies that have been studied, about half the cases, show severe arteriosclerosis, which is the thickening, hardening and fatty lining of the arteries, which may lead to a heart attack or other cardiovascular problems. Here's Rühle to explain.
We are usually saying that, you know, arteriosclerosis is a modern lifestyle attributed disease, which is not correct in this sense, because we actually have a lot of cases of ancient humans who are suffering from arteriosclerosis. And that's fascinating, because it basically shows that also the genetic basis for having it is actually quite old.
State-of-the-art technologies like CT scans and X-rays are used on mummies. This can give good results without harming the ancient bodies. Sometimes the technology can even be used to solve thousands of year-old mysteries. Rühle was involved, for example, in using X-ray-based technology to determine the cause of death of the Iceman, or Ötzi as he is otherwise known, a uniquely well-preserved Neolithic glacier mummy found in 1991 in the mountains of South Tyrol. The answer, by the way, was an arrow wound to the left shoulder. It is even possible to extract ancient DNA from historical samples of bone and mummified tissue. This can tell us, for instance, whether ancient peoples were lactose persistent or intolerant, so whether they could tolerate milk after childhood or not. Italian scientists have found that Ötzi was lactose intolerant, unlike most modern Europeans, raised on a dairy diet. Learning something from the past, for the present and the future, is very stimulating, Rühle says.
And it really goes to the core of our challenges. You know, if we have increased life expectancy and so on, that affects everybody in a very positive sense, but it also has consequences in terms of financial assessments. We clearly see that, for example, if people move less, they get less robust, they are more likely to fracture their bones. So every change, every future trade actually has an impact. And I think this is the fascinating thing about this sort of novel approach within the traditional medical field.
Isabel Leibold-Johnson with that report. If evolutionary medicine addresses the question of why we get sick, then nanomedicine can help us better understand how we get sick and help us to fight diseases more effectively. Nanomedicine is what you get when you use extremely tiny materials in medical research. In fact, a nanometer is 1/1,000,000,000th of a meter. To put that into perspective, a sheet of paper is about 100,000 nanometers thick. Celia Lutterbacher found out more.
Nanomaterials' tiny size is their greatest strength when it comes to diagnosing and treating disease. That's because the molecular building blocks of the human body are also measured at the nanoscale. A strand of DNA is about 2 nanometers wide. Patrick Boisso is the principal investigator of the European Nanomedicine Characterization Laboratory. I asked him, what are the main uses of nanomaterials in medicine today?
Cancer is the major field of application of these nanodrugs, but not only. They're also in cardiovascular, in infectious diseases, in neurodegenerative diseases, and so on and so on.
Nanomedicine is a relatively new area of research. Scientists first began developing nanomaterials that could be inserted into pharmaceutical products in the 1990s. Once inside the human body, nanomedicines can deliver more precise doses of drugs to more specific areas of the body than has been possible in the past. Boisso explains how this is especially important in cancer treatment.
It means highly toxic drugs, because the drugs we use for curing cancer sometimes are highly, highly toxic. So these highly toxic drugs, once they reach the cancer cells, they're killing the cells, it's good. But if they reach, let's say, healthy cells nearby or in another tissue, then they generate these side effects, which can be, let's say, side effects in the lungs, on the heart, you have many of them. So nanoformulations have been used to reduce these side effects and to improve the targeting and to deliver the right dose at the right cells. Of course, it's not a 100% efficacy.
The Nanomedicine Characterization Laboratory wants to fast-track testing of promising nanomedicines. One of its partners is the Swiss Federal Institute for Materials Science and Technology. Peter Vick, who heads its Particles Biology Interaction Lab, says there could be a lot of benefits for Swiss industry, too.
For Switzerland, that means that we will have further harmonization in all this standardization process, so that we provide also for the Swiss industry an additional portal or an access point, that they have a kind of a shortcut access to this know-how.
As well as better diagnosis and treatment, the use of small targeted doses of nanomedicine could help make future treatments less wasteful. There's still much to learn about how nanomaterials interact with both the human body and the environment. That's why it's so important to test these new nanoformulations thoroughly now.
Celia Lutterbacher reporting. Thanks for listening to the Swiss Info podcast. To read more about any of these stories, head over to swissinfo.ch. Thanks this week to studio technician Danny Wheeler. I'm Jo Fay.